A big, happy Memorial Weekend hello to everyone listening all around the world, all across the United States. We're coming to you live from the world headquarters, the Command Center. Right here in Los Angeles, California, this is Coast to Coast AM, and I'm your host for the night, Jimmy Church. I'm sitting in for George, who is taking a well-deserved night off on this holiday weekend. Tonight we have back with us Dr. Stephen Greer, who is the founder of the Disclosure Project. And tonight, we're going to discuss the current state of the disclosure movement, the latest developments of free energy, and we're going to jump into his latest project, his newest movie, Unacknowledged. Later on, it's Friday, so you know what that means. We're going to have open lines, so get ready. You can also follow me right now on Twitter, at J Church Radio. I'm going to be following your tweets throughout the show tonight. But it's Friday. It's Memorial Weekend, and I want to get straight to it. So let's do this. We're going to be right back with tonight's guest, Dr. Stephen Greer. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church, sitting in for George tonight. He is taking a well-deserved holiday day off. And like I said, I'm following Twitter right now. You can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Any comments or questions for Dr. Greer or myself throughout the show tonight, it will be feeding directly to my left. But let's get straight to it. Dr. Greer is the founder of the Disclosure Project, CSETI, the Orion Project, Sirius Technology Advanced Research. He is the father of the disclosure movement. He presided over the groundbreaking National Press Club disclosure event back in May 2001, where over 20 military, government, intelligence, and corporate witnesses presented compelling testimony regarding the existence of extraterrestrial life visiting this planet. I would like to welcome back to Coast AM our good friend, Dr. Stephen Greer. Dr. Greer.
Hello.
How are you? Everything good?
Yeah, we're doing very well. How are you doing?
It's good to hear your voice. But normally, Stephen, which is, it's funny, I would say, you know, how have you been? What have you been up to? But you and I were just together up in San Francisco, and right. And it was a great event. But I kind of want to start off there. I was able to introduce you to some very, very large crowds that were very enthusiastic. And the way that you were engaged to the crowds, I thought was very compelling. And how has that changed over the years, or is it always like that? Because it was a pretty raucous moment there. They were very excited.
No, it's been like that for many years. And I think that the public recognizes that we really have to come together to make a pivotal millennial change in our civilization and also the way we're living on planet Earth. And for many years, you know, the whole UFO issue was reporting a sighting or something like that, which is important. We need data. And there's, you know, a million or so reported cases. But what became very clear to me in the 1990s is that that alone isn't going to change anything, that we're going to have to connect some dots. And one of the dots that we started to connect, and certainly was the central a point of the discussion I had when I briefed the CIA director here in Washington, where I am tonight, back in 1993, I can't believe it's been that long, was that, you know, the secrecy on this issue has mostly to do with very little about extraterrestrial intelligence, per se, and more to do with technology, energy, macroeconomic issues, and things of this sort, where you have the tail wagging the dog. You have big special interests and corrupting influences that have infiltrated the corridors of covert programs and government power. And what we have is a very messed up system. So this is something that many people didn't understand. I have to say, the very first question the CIA director asked was, why are they lying to me and the president? At that time, it was President Clinton, about this. Why won't they tell us anything? And I said, because they don't think you would go along with the agenda of keeping this secret. And if it gets disclosed, it's the end of oil, and it's the end of coal, and it's the end of nuclear power and public utilities, because the technologies that are behind what the public call a UFO, which is really just an alternative energy and propulsion system, once that's disclosed, we're moving on to the next chapter in human civilization. But then again, the fossil fuels and the centralized petrodollar system is going to go the way of royal typewriters and horse and buggies.
How has your approach to disclosure changed? As you know, I've been using the acronym, you know, this is Disclosure 2.0, that I feel that we're changing and moving into a new phase. How has your approach changed from, say, 2001 and trying to push for disclosure to how you approach it today?
Well, it really goes back to 1992 and 3. And in our initial efforts, and as most folks know, I mean, if you go to our website, SiriusDisclosure.com, S-I-R-I-U-S, Disclosure.com, you can see the Project Starlight documents, which we sent to President Clinton way back in the mid-1990s. And, you know, astronaut Edgar Mitchell was at that meeting, a whole lot of other people from all over the world. And we, at that time, we were, you know, recommending that the Congress and the President get behind ending the secrecy, and that there needed to be leadership. By 2001, we had come to the realization that, in fact, the leaders weren't going to lead at all, and that we would have to. And so in the late 1990s, we sent a letter to every agency in the U.S. government, basically saying the programs that are dealing with this issue are being run as unacknowledged special access projects. And they're illegal. They're not being overseen by the Congress or the President properly or by members of his cabinet. And therefore, we are going to come forward with, well, top secret witnesses who have signed national security oaths, as well as documents that are top secret, which have not been declassified. And we are free from punishment under the National Security Act because the projects dealing with the subject are themselves a criminal enterprise. And we sent this as an unless otherwise directed letter, which basically means it's a military technique where you send the letter to these officials, and unless they take an overt act to say, no, you're wrong, you're saying unless otherwise directed, this is our assessment, and you're acceding to it, and we're going to go forward with disclosing this information,
right,
which is what we proceeded to do in 2001. So that's basically what our strategy has been. And at this point, we're wanting to ramp that up to the next level, where we begin to have large-scale mass defections from these illegal projects who will come forward and speak the truth, with or without the cover of an executive order from the President or the Congress, because quite frankly, to date, now this may change, but to date there has not been anyone in the government that's had the courage to do it and take on these special interests.
And with the Special Access Project and SAP, which is hardcore secrecy in of itself, and it's compartmentalized, and it's a very serious need-to-know situation. And then you take it to the right next level, the USAP, the Unacknowledged Special Access Project, and now we are dealing with something where there's no money, there's no paper trail. There's no responsibility, there's no oversight, and quite frankly, nobody really knows what's going on. Is that an accurate description?
Yes, it's absolutely accurate. And in fact, our film Sirius, which came out, which hit number one on Netflix about 6 months ago, that we have a clip in there of George W. Bush's Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld, stating that there's $2.3 trillion unaccounted for, missing out of the Department of Defense budget. I understand now it's about $8.5 trillion. So when he made that statement, it was the day before 9/11. He literally made that statement on the 10th of September 2001, a few months after the historic National Press Club disclosure, a project event, and then the next day 9/11 happened. But even people like Donald Rumsfeld, who's hardly, you know, some sort of radical, you know, aging hippie or something, He was appalled by this. And the truth of the matter is, when we speak of these unacknowledged special access projects, they are like freestanding silos. And the way they work is, and I have people on my team who've been in these types of projects, is that it doesn't matter how high the rank of the person is who may ask about what you're doing. If they're not directly read into or briefed on an unacknowledged special access project, everyone in that project is to turn to them and say, no such project exists. And that includes whether it's the president asking, the CIA director that I briefed is asking, the Secretary of Defense that Gordon Cooper and I approached, who was Secretary of Defense Cohen for President Clinton, et cetera, or even a senator who is on the Intelligence Committee of the Senate. So it really doesn't matter what your rank is. It matters if they think you would go along with the agenda of the secrecy. So that is the determining factor. And it's not just in the United States. In the United Kingdom, you have the same dynamic. I personally spent many hours with Lord Hill Norton, who is a five-star admiral. He had been head of the Ministry of Defense, head of MI5 and MI6. It's like their CIA. And he told me very frankly, he had never been briefed on this issue. But later, after he left office, found out projects were going on. So this is not a conspiracy theory. This is fact. And what we're going to do in this upcoming film is to prove that fact. And I think the public needs to understand that it's very undemocratic, it's illegal, it's unconstitutional, it's against everything our way of life should stand for, and it makes a mockery out of the rule of law in our country as well as many others.
If anybody, this is what's really fascinating to me, and I've done a lot of research into USAPs and SAPs, a lot of it because of you raising the issue. But when you go and study it and you look, if you wanted to inquire, you're in Washington and you wanted to inquire about an SAP or USAP, you wouldn't know where to look. The designation and the abbreviations and the numbers and the codings that are on these SAPs, you wouldn't even know what to look for or where to start. It is so coded in secrecy.
Well, I know only that, but even if you are given a document, because I have one, and that has some of the code project names and numbers on it, when I gave that document to the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Tom Wilson, and I was in his office, I brought astronaut Edgar Mitchell along so that he could learn more about this. I was trying to introduce Edgar Mitchell to all these issues back then. And what happened is that prior to my arriving, we sent by courier this briefing that had this document in it. The admiral actually recognized one of the project code names or numbers and contacted a contractor for the government that was involved. And he said, look, I'm the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And they said to him, yes, we know who you are, Admiral Wilson. And he says, I want to be read into or briefed on this project. And they flat out said to him, sir, you do not have a need to know. And he said, damn it, how can I not have a need to know? I'm the head of intelligence for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I put together the intelligence briefings for the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the United States military. And they said, sir, we cannot discuss this with you, and hung up on him. So, I mean, you know, you can only imagine how angry and frankly frightened this admiral was by the time we got to the briefing.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I'm telling you, I was there, and I have witnesses who were there when this was said. So the question then becomes, how can an operation be legal if they're going to brush aside a CIA director or the head of intelligence joint staff? Or in the case when I briefed the General Patrick Hughes, he was the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency. And for people who don't know what that is, the DIA is like the CIA for the Pentagon.
Right.
It's enormous.
Right.
And this was the three-star general who was head of it. And he told us the same story. He says, I've made inquiries into this issue. I know something's going on, but they won't tell me a thing.
What about the president? What about the president? Does he have access to an SAP or a USAP?
Well, look, an SAP is not that unusual. That's just the special access project, which means it's compartmented intelligence, it's top secret. But we're talking the unacknowledged special access project that deals specifically with the UFO and ET issue. And the answer to your question is some presidents have been told partial information. Some have been told nothing. It really depends on whether they think they can manipulate that president into a certain agenda. For example, Ronald Reagan was briefed partially on the issue because they wanted him to get behind Star Wars, the SDI, the Strategic Defense Initiative, and the launching of putting weapon systems up in space.
Right.
And the colonel, there's a man named Colonel Holman, who was on the briefing team back in those days, in the late Carter and early Reagan years, who told me very directly that they concocted and hoaxed an alien threat scenario so that President Reagan would get on board the Strategic Defense Initiative and dump untold billions of dollars into that boondoggle. So in that sense, it depends. They will say a certain amount if they find there's someone that they can manipulate. In the case of, for example, Jimmy Carter, we know from affidavits that we have from people who were asked by the president to look into this, that the president, when he was during the transition, asked George Bush Sr., the then CIA director, who was a CIA director who knew about these projects, and President Carter asked the CIA director Bush if about the issue, and Bush said to President Carter, "I'm not going to tell you about this issue. See if you can go get it from the Congressional Research Service," and brushed him aside. Now, this is a serious problem because it's treasonous, it's not legal, and yet, what is an incoming president to do? So it very much depends on whether a president is in the back pocket of big oil, big money, et cetera. If you are, you'll be told something. If you aren't, you're not going to be told anything. And it really has to do with that. People are very naive to think that when you're dealing with something like this, that the niceties of the Constitution have any bearing at all. They just run amok all over the place.
When it comes to an unacknowledged special access project, a USAP, do you have specific examples? I understand, the UFO subjects that could be there, but do you have direct documents that actually state what projects are being utilized and what types of technology?
Well, we have documents that give code names and code numbers, and they run all over the place. They range from reconnaissance and retrieval projects to projects dealing with the studying of the technologies, so-called reverse engineering, the development of anti-gravity type propulsion systems at the Lockheed Martin Skunk Works and Northrop Grumman. So it really depends. And I want to point out that the action, the big action, is in the contracting sector. In other words, you're much more likely to have people who are working at the Lockheed Skunk Works or Booz Allen Hamilton or Northrop Grumman or SAIC in a deep compartmented operation that's under contract to the Department of Defense or the CIA, who will know about these issues, then you will say your rank and file of high-ranking folks at the Pentagon. Now, it is certainly there are people in the Department of Defense and CIA who know about the issue, but those are permanent bureaucrats, and the real big action is going on in the corporate world.
So there isn't, there's very, very few, a select few, that actually know the entire contents of a USAP. After that, it is completely fractured and compartmentalized. Am I following you correctly?
Yes, and the way this works is you can have someone working very near to someone in a project, right next to them, and they will be in one compartment and the other person's in another, and they don't have any idea what the other one's working on.
Exactly. Well, let me jump in. We're going to take a break right there. Dr. Greer, This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. More with Dr. Greer right after this short break. Stay with us. Welcome back to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Sitting in for George tonight, he is taking a well-deserved holiday night off. Our guest tonight is Dr. Stephen Greer, founder of the Disclosure Project. And Stephen, right before the break, we were talking about SAPs and USAPs and top secret clearances. And my concern, I think, with a lot of this is the actual Oval Office itself. I think we all assume that the president has a top secret clearance and can do what he wants. And if he can't, is that even legal to block him from top secret information?
No, it's not legal. But, you know, when I was being first introduced to this whole area, the man who set up my meeting with the CIA director, I brought this up to him and I said, how can it be that the CIA director and the president of the United States is being lied to and denied access to these secret projects? And he chuckled. He said, look, I was on Ronald Reagan's National Security Council staff. And if we didn't want the old man to know, we lied to him. And I said, to the president of the United States, and he looked at me and he said, yes, of course, very cynically. So I tell people, welcome to Washington. I mean, this is exactly what Eisenhower was bitter about when he left the Oval Office. And President Eisenhower is the one who famously said, beware the military-industrial complex. He was an anti-military. He was concerned about this kind of excessive secrecy, and he warned that this secrecy would be a threat to our democracy and our way of life. And you should look at that speech that Eisenhower gave, and it was his farewell speech. It was his last address to the nation as leaving the presidency. People go, why would this five-star general and conservative Republican, a military guy, be saying this? Well, you know, fast forward to the guys that I ended up meeting, and one of whom was a man who had worked with Eisenhower. He said, yes, and Eisenhower bitterly complained to him that, in fact, he was being lied to and denied operational access to many projects that had gotten out of control in these super secret programs. And I think this is a fundamental problem. We have a colonel in the Air Force on audio tape who was the chief steward for Air Force One when Jack Kennedy was flying to Berlin when he gave the famous I am a Berliner speech. And this Air Force colonel told me, and actually he broke down in tears, and he said the president was talking about this issue and said that he had been briefed on some of it, he knew about some of it, but that the whole matter, I'm quoting here, the whole matter is out of my hands, and I don't know why. And that was what Jack Kennedy was saying to this Air Force lieutenant colonel. So I think the public has to realize that this is a constitutional crisis as well as a crisis of leadership. And it's very incorrect to think just because you're the president that they're going to tell you everything. Because, look, the president receives what's called a PDB, the Presidential Daily Briefing. And it's put together by the CIA, overseen by the director of the CIA. But if the head of the CIA happens to be someone that people who are in the agency working on this area of unacknowledged special access projects doesn't know, such as Woolsey, when I met with him in 1993, how is he going to brief the president? So it isn't as if the president has a magic wand. They're very much dependent on the integrity of the system, which has broken down severely since the late 1950s.
And I think that most of the focus, Dr. Greer, is on free energy and the suppression of that. Are we going to see dramatic movements in free energy soon?
Yes, well, I think here, too, this is exactly what has to happen. The people need to come together and bring the technologies out independent of the government and large corporations, just like the Disclosure Project is bringing out more and more witnesses, more and more information, independent of anything being done by the government, because the government is broken. And more importantly, the people who are in leadership positions in the government do not want to touch the issue for a number of reasons. One is the fear of ridicule. And number two is the fear of reprisals and threats. And one of the most stunning moments I had was after I did this briefing for the CIA director, a friend of President Clinton came to my home and said, look, they're very supportive what you're recommending. However, we're convinced that the president does this, what we were recommending, which was disclosing the information, bringing the technologies out. He said, we're convinced, or at least the president's people, closest people are convinced, that he'll end up like Jack Kennedy. Somehow his presidency will terminate. And I have it on good authority that when President Carter kept pushing and pushing on this issue, there were people who came in, threatened him, and said, sir, if you would like to finish your first term as president of the United States, you will keep your mouth shut about this issue. And so you hear enough of these things from the insiders in Washington, you begin to realize that the currency that matters is courage. And you have to be willing to take on what are a bunch of thugs, and I think are people who are beyond the pale when it comes to doing things legally and honestly. But that's very hard to find with politicians. So when you talk about these technologies, let's be honest, I think we're going to have to do it ourselves. The public are going to have to get together and create a mechanism for bringing these technologies forward.
And what are some of the technologies that you are currently working with some of your engineers?
Well, what we're doing, trying to identify. Now, if there's anyone listening, I want to be very clear, anyone listening who has or know of someone who has a so-called zero-point quantum vacuum or over-unity energy system, a system that puts more energy out than you put into it because it's pulling energy out of the zero point or similar field, they need to get hold of us. Because we have identified some people, and this is fairly recent in the last 2 months, who are committed to getting these technologies out, who have the financial wherewithal to do it. It used to be we'd say, well, you know, we need to disclose them. But now we have actually the ability to do it if we can prove them. Now, we're going to require that the technology be validated, tested, and reproduced, and independently reproduced, because that's the sine qua non of science. You have to have independent reproducibility, or it's some kind of a fraud, of which there are many, I might point out. So we have to do this. Now, we have the means to do it now, whereas we didn't, say, 6 months ago. And I would encourage people to contact us at our website if they have such a system. We are in the process of evaluating and speaking to people now who claim to have these. They have not been independently tested and validated yet. So that's what we're looking to do in the next few months. And if we find something, the instant we do, we will disclose it massively. And when I say, what we are very opposed, by the way, to trying to keep this sort of technology secret, go the patent route, or any of that, it has always failed. So we want to acquire the technology. We have people who can fund it. If someone needs to be paid for their research or what have you, we can do that. And then give it to the public in an open source way, meaning there's no intellectual property restrictions, no patent approach. Because let's face it, don't take my word for it. The Federation of American Scientists, a very mainstream science organization, they have a national security project here in Washington. And in 2010, they concluded there were 5,135 patents that had been seized under the National Security Act and kept secret, many of them dealing with energy. In fact, they cited a solar photovoltaic panel that was more than 20% efficient in 1974, I believe it was, which 40-some years ago was a huge breakthrough, and it was confiscated. So what are the valid national security reasons for that, except that you have a special interest in oil and the petrodollar saying, we don't want this technology out. We'd rather have those polar ice caps melt first.
Exactly. We need to jump in and take a break right here. But when we come back after the break, Dr. Greer, I want to address the direct subject of why can't this be patented? The patent office doesn't want to hear about any of this. This is Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight, Dr. Stephen Greer, my host, Jimmy Church. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight is Dr. Stephen Greer. Dr. Greer, so right before the break, one of the things that I just trip on is the patent office, when it comes to free energy or some type of mechanism that's going to output more than its input, they don't even look at. And as soon as they get that brief description at the top of the patent application, it gets blown out. Why is that?
Well, I think there is a corrupt influence in virtually every agency that enforces this policy. And, you know, Dr. Tom Vallone, who's a physicist, was in the patent office and blew the whistle on this kind of behavior and was fired for it, subsequently sued them and won. And I know this gentleman personally, and he's been involved in these new energy issues for many years. These are not facts, and doubt is not a conspiracy theory. It's a fact that many scientists and inventors who have these sort of technologies will have them confiscated. Many people don't know that Stan Meyer, who had a car running on water, which was real, also had a toroid, a donut-shaped object, that had a national security order slapped on it that was a free energy device, and our team actually saw it. Unfortunately, there were a group of people who outbid our group in acquiring it, and they took it to Michigan, and once they got it operational, they had all kinds of death threats and ended up disappearing in the last couple of years. And this was predicted by our team. We said, look, they're doing this secretively. They think they're going to get away with it, and they're not. So here's a key thing for anyone listening. Secrecy is the domain of these other guys. They got you beat. Disclosure, there's nothing they can do about it. Imagine if you have a technology that works and you dump all the information on the internet about it and you put it out there open source. You don't try to go through the legal trickery and all the normal stuff that businesses and venture capital do. It's out. With the technology that exists with the internet today and social media, there'd be no way to pull it back. But if you play the normal venture capital game, the business intellectual property game, they're going to beat you every single time. And in fact, the proof is that in 2016, 100 years at least after when we could have had Tesla-like systems, we don't have them. So we have to develop a different strategy. Our recommendation, what we're planning to do, if somebody will cooperate with us who has one of these devices, is to get it to us. We can compensate them. They'll be taken care of. And we will disclose it open source to the entire world, no intellectual property restrictions. Anyone who wants to can then further develop it and put it into application. That, I believe, is the way to get around the whole intellectual property and patent office game, because they are corrupt, and it's not just in the United States, it's in other countries. Moreover, even if you don't go to patent, I know a man that we had under contract who ended up being threatened, but back in the 1970s, he had a very high-tech free energy device. He hadn't even gone to the point of patent application. The thugs knocked on his door, confiscated the device, and said, you are now working for us. And for the last 40 years, he's worked for a contractor for the CIA. And I know this man very well. He's been at my home. I know him personally. This is, again, happens over and over again. So the only way to get around it is to get people who have this knowledge, who can build an operational device, and I don't care about plans. We have, you know, file drawers filled with plans. I'm talking about somebody who has something working. We will get it out. I guarantee it. We'll get it out, or you're going to see me in the grave. We will not succumb to a national security order. In fact, years ago, when Ted Koppel of ABC Nightline asked me, what could happen if they served me with a national security order, I said I would go on the media and tear it up in front of millions of people and say this has no enforceability, because I know that the order is not being done with the consent of the Congress or the president or the people's representatives. And therefore, it's sheer thuggery. And I think that we're going to have to call a spade a spade.
Is it because there's no way for large corporations in the fossil fuel industry, there isn't a way to profit on free energy? And if they could, it would take away the word free, certainly, but then we would actually start to see it out in the marketplace, and we would see it in the commercial environment.
Actually, I think it would create an enormous uptick in the economy. It would create a huge number of jobs and development. I mean, remember, 48% of the world's population doesn't even have indoor plumbing, a pot to pee in, literally. So when you're looking at the whole planet, it's grossly underdeveloped.
Right.
Poverty is amazing.
Right.
So this sort of technology would change that dynamic, Jimmy. And so when that happens, you're going to have 1,000 companies that will be reaching the size of Apple that will prosper. So no, I don't think that's the issue. I think it's about centralized macroeconomic control. Because what happens when every village and every home has its own power plant and can create its own energy, its own micro agriculture that can be organic, et cetera, and so on?
Well, it's just another version of solar power. You know,
but something that's enormously more cost effective.
Sure, so sure.
I have the largest private solar farm in Virginia at my country home out there near the University of Virginia. And you're talking an enormously expensive and inefficient system, but it's better than nothing.
Right.
What we need to do is realize that you could have something that would be like a heat pump at your house that costs very little money, that would run all your energy needs for decades before it would need to be replaced. So there, you're going to get rid of all your public utilities. You're going to get rid of all your fossil fuel plants. It's an enormous multi-hundred trillion dollar transformation. Now, there will be winners and there will be losers, but it happens to be the people who will be the losers in that change are the folks who now, right now, have unbelievable amount of power and money. And so that's where you get into these corrupting influences. And unfortunately, that's what we're facing. The only way to get around it, therefore, is to bypass the large corporate and governmental entities, and the people get to come together and do it as an open source and, I think, massively disclosed effort. If you look at things like GitHub,
well, actually, let me jump in really quick. We got to hit a hard break here, but I'll say this really quick. We have solar power over at our house, and I can't believe that every house, every business in the country doesn't have solar power. It's absolutely amazing. This is Coast to Coast AM. Our guest tonight, Dr. Stephen Greer. We'll be right back.